Раздел 1. Аудирование. Сейчас вы будете выполнять задание по аудированию. Каждый текст прозвучит 2 раза. После 1 и 2 прослушивания у вас будет время для выполнения и проверки заданий. Все паузы включены в аудиозапись. Остановка и повторное воспроизведение аудиозаписи не предусмотрены. По окончании выполнения всего раздела аудирования перенесите свои ответы в бланк ответов номер 1. Задание 1. Вы услышите 6 высказываний. Установите соответствие между высказываниями каждого говорящего A-F и утверждениями, данными в списке 1-7. Используйте каждое утверждение, обозначенное соответствующей цифрой, только 1 раз. В задании есть 1 лишнее утверждение. Вы услышите запись 2. Занесите свои ответы в таблицу. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданием. Now we are ready to start. Speaker A.
I find it very difficult to do something in complete silence. I need some pleasant noise when I read, study, or do household chores. In my opinion, classical music is best for intellectual activity, and it has to be instrumental, no singing, just something quiet and meditative, like Debussy or Bach. Classical music is a perfect way to create a nice working atmosphere.
Speaker B.
What a mistake parents make when they teach their children to play a musical instrument. I was one of such poor, unfortunate kids. Do you think it made me like classical music? Ha! I hate it. All those hours of torture when you have to practice, practice, and for what? To go on stage and play it once a year and make a spectacle of yourself if you happen to make a mistake that ruins the whole performance?
Speaker C.
I don't know how some people can do things like reading while classical music is playing. For me, it's impossible. I immediately stop understanding what I'm reading and start actively listening to the music. A good piece of music is like a good story. Especially something like Beethoven's sonatas or Rachmaninoff's concertos. There's so much happening in them that eventually I find myself crying and laughing and feeling all sorts of emotions.
Speaker D.
Nowadays, teaching children how to play a musical instrument is not as popular as it used to be. I think it's a shame that people don't see much point in it. Of course, you have to have a lot of talent to become a real musician and actually make a living out of it. But it is known that children who study classical music seriously do a lot better at school in all subjects. Learning to play a musical instrument teaches you how to be patient, hardworking, and diligent. And it develops your brain.
Speaker E.
You won't catch me watching a baseball match or soccer. I don't find it exciting. What I do find exciting, though, is following music competitions. If they happen to be when I have a vacation, I spend days listening to the performers and writing down my impressions, and then I watch them win or lose. It's also exciting to follow the careers of the winners. Many of them become famous, and it's pleasant to think that I've seen them at the very rise of their careers.
Speaker F.
I would like my children to learn how to play a musical instrument, but nowadays it is so expensive. A good instrument as small as a flute costs about $1,000, if not more, let alone a piano or a violin. And then, the music lessons. Another thing is, it is such a commitment. You have to always make sure that your child practices long enough to prepare for exams. And then, after all these sacrifices and efforts, they choose some other profession. So what's the point?
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now you will hear the texts again. Now we're ready to start. Speaker A.
I find it very difficult to do something in complete silence. I need some pleasant noise when I read, study, or do household chores. In my opinion, classical music is best for intellectual activity, and it has to be instrumental, no singing, just something quiet and meditative, like Debussy or Bach. Classical music is a perfect way to create a nice working atmosphere.
Speaker B.
What a mistake parents make when they teach their children to play a musical instrument. I was one of such poor, unfortunate kids. Do you think it made me like classical music? Ha! I hate it. All those hours of torture when you have to practice, practice. And for what? To go on stage and play it once a year and make a spectacle of yourself if you happen to make a mistake that ruins the whole performance?
Speaker C.
I don't know how some people can do things like reading while classical music is playing. For me, it's impossible. I immediately stop understanding what I'm reading and start actively listening to the music. A good piece of music is like a good story, especially something like Beethoven's sonatas or Rachmaninoff's concertos. There's so much happening in them that eventually I find myself crying and laughing and feeling all sorts of emotions.
Speaker D.
Nowadays, teaching children how to play a musical instrument is not as popular as it used to be. I think it's a shame that people don't see much point in it. Of course, you have to have a lot of talent to become a real musician and actually make a living out of it, but it is known that children who study classical music seriously do a lot better at school in all subjects. Learning to play a musical instrument teaches you how to be patient, hardworking, and diligent, and it develops your brain.
Speaker E.
You won't catch me watching a baseball match or soccer. I don't find it exciting. What I do find exciting, though, is following music competitions. If they happen to be when I have a vacation, I spend days listening to the performers and writing down my impressions, and then I watch them win or lose. It's also exciting to follow the careers of the winners. Many of them become famous, and it's pleasant to think that I've seen them at the very rise of their careers.
Speaker F.
I would like my children to learn how to play a musical instrument, but nowadays it is so expensive. A good instrument as small as a flute costs about $1,000, if not more, let alone a piano or a violin. And then, the music lessons. Another thing is, it is such a commitment. You have to always make sure that your child practices long enough to prepare for exams. And then, after all these sacrifices and efforts, they choose some other profession. So what's the point?
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. Задание 2. Вы услышите диалог. Определите, какие из приведенных утверждений A, G соответствуют содержанию текста. 1. True. Какие не соответствуют? 2. False. И о чем в тексте не сказано? То есть на основании текста нельзя дать ни положительного, ни отрицательного ответа. 3. Not stated. Занесите номер выбранного вами варианта ответа в таблицу. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 20 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданием. Now we're ready to start.
Hi, Lucy. I haven't seen you for a while. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, Donald. Good to see you. I've been away traveling the whole year.
Oh, so you've actually taken a gap year, have you?
Yes. I decided to see the world before I started school again. I wanted some freedom and excitement.
Wow. I was also thinking about it, but in the end I decided against it. Besides, I got accepted by a really good university.
Oh, congratulations. I wasn't so lucky. So, rather than going to a college which was not my first choice, I decided it was a great chance for me to travel.
Sure. So how was it? Where did you go?
Well, I've been to Kenya, India, and Australia, and it was great.
No kidding. That's half the world. Sounds like something from a Discovery Channel program. How did you manage it? Wasn't it terribly expensive?
It would have been if I had just traveled.
What did you do then?
I worked as a volunteer for different organizations, mostly those that deal with sea pollution. I've collected so much plastic garbage last year, it features in practically every dream that I have now. The moment I lie down and close my eyes, I'm back there, with my rubber gloves and mask on, and tons of stinky garbage to collect.
Gosh, that sounds horrible. It must have been really hard work.
Well, it was, and it wasn't. I did have some days off, and I did make good friends. And I'll tell you, with a good joke and a hearty laugh with your friends, most disgusting piles of garbage can be bearable. Besides, I've seen such beautiful places, especially when they were clean after our good work.
That's amazing. I'm so impressed. I don't think I would ever be able to do anything like that. I mean, I totally support the idea, cleaning our planet of all that garbage and protecting wildlife and everything. But it is one thing to just support it in theory and do everyday things like recycling, and quite a different story when you actually go to all these places and do it.
Speaking of wildlife, that was probably the most heartbreaking aspect of what I did. Sometimes we found little turtles and fish and seabirds in all that garbage, tangled in nets and unable to free themselves. Oftentimes, we managed to save them, but not always.
Oh, that must have been hard.
Yeah. Hey, Donald, I really need to hurry now, but I didn't have a chance to ask you about your year at the university. Let's meet for a coffee one of these days.
Sure. I'll also bring my little brother Andy, if you don't mind. He's so much into sea animals. He would be thrilled to hear your stories about saving them. How about tomorrow around 5 at the Never Late for Latte Coffee House?
Perfect. I'll see you there.
Bye.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now you will hear the text again. Now we're ready to start.
Hi, Lucy. I haven't seen you for a while. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, Donald. Good to see you. I've been away traveling the whole year.
Oh, so you've actually taken a gap year, have you?
Yes. I decided to see the world before I started school again. I wanted some freedom and excitement.
Wow. I was also thinking about it, but in the end I decided against it. Besides, I got accepted by a really good university.
Oh, congratulations. I wasn't so lucky. So, rather than going to a college which was not my first choice, I decided it was a great chance for me to travel.
Sure. So how was it? Where did you go?
Well, I've been to Kenya, India, and Australia, and it was great.
No kidding. That's half the world. Sounds like something from a Discovery Channel program. How did you manage it? Wasn't it terribly expensive?
It would have been if I had just traveled.
What did you do then?
I worked as a volunteer for different organizations, mostly those that deal with sea pollution. I've collected so much plastic garbage last year, it features in practically every dream that I have now. The moment I lie down and close my eyes, I'm back there, with my rubber gloves and mask on and tons of stinky garbage to collect.
Gosh, that sounds horrible. It must have been really hard work.
Well, it was, and it wasn't. I did have some days off, and I did make good friends. And I'll tell you, with a good joke and a hearty laugh with your friends, most disgusting piles of garbage can be bearable. Besides, I've seen such beautiful places, especially when they were clean after our good work.
That's amazing. I'm so impressed. I don't think I would ever be able to do anything like that. I mean, I totally support the idea, cleaning our planet of all that garbage and protecting wildlife and everything. But it is one thing to just support it in theory and do everyday things like recycling, and quite a different story when you actually go to all these places and do it.
Speaking of wildlife, that was probably the most heartbreaking aspect of what I did. Sometimes we found little turtles and fish and seabirds in all that garbage, tangled in nets and unable to free themselves. Oftentimes, we managed to save them, but not always.
Oh, that must have been hard.
Yeah. Hey, Donald, I really need to hurry now, but I didn't have a chance to ask you about your year at the university. Let's meet for a coffee one of these days.
Sure. I'll also bring my little brother Andy, if you don't mind. He's so much into sea animals. He would be thrilled to hear your stories about saving them. How about tomorrow around 5 at the Never Late for Latte Coffee House?
Perfect. I'll see you there.
Bye.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. Задание 3.9. Вы услышите интервью. В заданиях 3.9 запишите в поле ответа цифру 1, 2 или 3, соответствующую выбранному вами варианту ответа. Вы услышите запись дважды. У вас есть 50 секунд, чтобы ознакомиться с заданием. Now we are ready to start.
This is Education Today. Hello and welcome. In our studio today is William Chandler, founder and CEO of Boarding Best, the agency that will help your child find the best boarding school. Good morning, Mr. Chandler. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
So, a boarding school in the 21st century, is it really a thing? Isn't it something from the Victorian era, if not earlier? Or, for that matter, a fantasy book?
Well, yes and no. The first boarding school appeared in Britain in the 14th century. That was Winchester College. 60 years later, in 1440, Eton College opened its doors, and then some others. But the boom of boarding schools was, of course, in the 19th century, as you have mentioned. The Industrial Revolution generated lots of money. Many industrialists could afford an expensive education for their children. Boarding schools for boys and for girls were thriving.
I'm sure this changed in the 20th century.
It did. By the end of the 20th century, boarding schools became less popular, and the number of boarders in Britain fell considerably. But now we see a true revival, even though everything comes at a cost.
What do you mean?
Well, British boarding schools have always been quintessentially British. But today they are suffering from an identity crisis. Over 40% of their pupils come from other countries, and only 2-5% of British children are full boarders at boarding schools.
Really? That's incredible. Why is that?
Several reasons. First of all, prices have gone up in the last 10 years from about £23,000 per year to an average of £35,000 now. Many British middle and upper middle class families who used to send their children to boarding schools no longer can afford it. Whereas the growth of wealth in Asia, combined with concerns about the quality of local education, created a huge demand from overseas students. Another reason is that in the West, there's recently been a change in attitudes towards children, their upbringing, and education, which made boarding schools less attractive to parents.
I can understand that. I wouldn't want to send my children away and miss watching them grow up. I would certainly want to be an influence in their upbringing.
Today, many parents think the same way, but now you can find a reasonably good school locally, while in the previous centuries there were very few of them. Education was not compulsory, and only wealthy families could afford it, and, for that matter, were interested in giving their children a good education. So a boarding school was their only option. Besides, for centuries, public schools were viewed as the place where a true English gentleman was raised. Parents would send their boys off to boarding schools, hoping they would grow up less spoiled, more self-disciplined, and considerate of others.
There is truth in that. I've heard many rich people say that it is a lot more difficult to raise a child when you are wealthy than if you are poor. It's hard not to spoil them. Of course, you can be a very strict parent, but then how do you maintain good relationships with your children? It's easier to delegate this mission to a school. But then the question is, how traditional are modern British schools in that sense? There are many books written about their horrors and their fearful, cruel headmasters and headmistresses disciplining children.
I'm happy to say all that is in the past. Modern British boarding schools are extremely competitive. They have to be. Old ways are out of fashion now, and schools need a good reputation to get their students. So, no need to worry about that.
You have 15 seconds to complete the task. Now you will hear the text again. Now we're ready to start.
This is Education Today. Hello and welcome. In our studio today is William Chandler, founder and CEO of Boarding Best, the agency that will help your child find the best boarding school. Good morning, Mr. Chandler. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
So, a boarding school in the 21st century. Is it really a thing? Isn't it something from the Victorian era, if not earlier? Or, for that matter, a fantasy book?
Well, yes and no. The first boarding school appeared in Britain in the 14th century. That was Winchester College. 60 years later, in 1440, Eton College opened its doors, and then some others. But the boom of boarding schools was, of course, in the 19th century, as you have mentioned. The Industrial Revolution generated lots of money. Many industrialists could afford an expensive education for their children. Boarding schools for boys and for girls were thriving.
I'm sure this changed in the 20th century.
It did. By the end of the 20th century, boarding schools became less popular, and the number of boarders in Britain fell considerably. But now we see a true revival, even though everything comes at a cost.
What do you mean?
Well, British boarding schools have always been quintessentially British, but today they are suffering from an identity crisis. Over 40% of their pupils come from other countries, and only 2-5% of British children are full boarders at boarding schools.
Really? That's incredible. Why is that?
Several reasons. First of all, prices have gone up in the last 10 years from about £23,000 per year to an average of £35,000 now. Many British middle and upper middle class families who used to send their children to boarding schools no longer can afford it. Whereas the growth of wealth in Asia, combined with concerns about the quality of local education, created a huge demand from overseas students. Another reason is that in the West, there's recently been a change in attitudes towards children, their upbringing, and education, which made boarding schools less attractive to parents.
I can understand that. I wouldn't want to send my children away and miss watching them grow up. I would certainly want to be an influence in their upbringing.
Today, many parents think the same way, but now you can find a reasonably good school locally, while in the previous centuries there were very few of them. Education was not compulsory, and only wealthy families could afford it, and, for that matter, were interested in giving their children a good education. So a boarding school was their only option. Besides, for centuries, public schools were viewed as the place where a true English gentleman was raised. Parents would send their boys off to boarding schools, hoping they would grow up less spoiled, more self-disciplined, and considerate of others.
There is truth in that. I've heard many rich people say that it is a lot more difficult to raise a child when you are wealthy than if you are poor. It's hard not to spoil them. Of course, you can be a very strict parent, but then how do you maintain good relationships with your children? It's easier to delegate this mission to a school. But then the question is, how traditional are modern British schools in that sense? There are many books written about their horrors and their fearful, cruel headmasters and headmistresses disciplining children.
I'm happy to say all that is in the past. Modern British boarding schools are extremely competitive. They have to be. Old ways are out of fashion now, and schools need a good reputation to get their students. So, no need to worry about that.
This is the end of the task. You now have 15 seconds to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test. Время, отведенное на выполнение заданий, истекло.